Thank you so much, Robinson Schwimmen, for introducing and that beautiful idea of finding these angels along the way. I was just telling our presenters that every time we have one of these Idea Lab programs, it might seem selfless. I'm creating a program for somebody else. Really, it's very selfish because I get such amazing insights and ideas and just new ways of thinking about things. I always leave with a page of notes. So thank you to our presenters for being here today. You really are those guides along our way. We are all working on behalf of our communities to try to create the most vibrant, uplifting, inspirational community experiences that we can. And individuals like you who invest your time, effort, and energy in community in whatever capacity you do really help us to create those community spaces. Thank you as well to those who have joined us live. For today's program, really being part of the conversation live and but being part of the conversation live really helps us to create these programs. So thank you for being here. We are really excited to get to discuss and share ideas today. So with that, I'm going to introduce our presenters. I am going to try to switch off between who speaks first, second, third, like I try to alternate so we get to share and all the keep it interesting. So I am going to just basic introduce the presenters who they are, and they are then going to introduce themselves. So we are honored today to welcome Rabbitin Rachili Taubis, Rabbitin Sarah Bienenfeld, and Mrs. Naomi Rich as our presenters today. And I am going to ask you to introduce yourselves. So Rachili, do you want to begin?
Sure. Hi, everyone. So nice to be part of this. Thank you, Robertson, Dr. Schwimmen, and thank you, Emma, for creating this space and for inviting me to speak. I live in Washington Heights, which is in New York City, and my husband is the rabbi of one of the shuls there, Mantana Jewish Center, so I'm the Robertson there. And I am officially on staff there, so I do help out in a formal position. I am also a certified Yuetzet Halacha, so that sort of has helped create that position, and I really answer questions for women definitely throughout my community and, you know, for the country. I also, which is my current location right now, I also teach at my Yenot Yeshiva High School for Girls, which is in Teaneck. I teach science and Judaic studies, so that's another similar hat that I wear, and I do actually do some Torah programming in the school also, although I think for this space I'll focus more on what I do in my shul. And the population that I generally work with, so something about my community is that we really have a diverse age and stage of congregants. People in their 20s, 30s, 40s, both individuals, married, families. And we also have a older population, 60s, 70s, 80s. And so really we try to, create space for everyone, in our community.
Okay. Amazing. Naomi, do you want to go next?
Sure. Hi, I'm Naomi Rich. I'm originally from Montreal and moved out to LA almost 15 years ago. I run women's programming at Adas Torah. It kind of started off as a volunteer position that morphed into its own job. Our shul really has a wide range as well. We probably start off between ages of 20 to 70 plus years old. Our core membership is probably between 25 to 45, but we really try to target everyone as much as possible.
Okay, amazing. And Sarah?
Hi, again, thank you for including me as well. Sarah Bienenfeld. I live in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, right outside of Philadelphia. I'm a Rebbetzin of the Young Israel of Cherry Hill. We've lived here for 11 years. And our shul, I would say, primarily is, again, also like every community and like every shul, I think probably across the country and world has a wide range, right? There's none that's exclusively a certain age. It's not like that's how we operate our schools, but there is a primary age group, I would say, of, you know, that we program for. We're speaking about women's programming. So I would say it's young mothers in their late 20s to early 40s is who we generally program for. Again, we do have the full age range and gamut, and that can make programming challenging, which I'm sure we'll discuss as we go along.
Okay. Yes. I think that's definitely true, that I've yet to come across a place that says they don't have some sort of diversity, whether it's in type, whether it's in demographic. So being able to understand that that's something that we all deal with in some way, even if your diversity looks different than ours, I think is really important as a starting off point, especially when we're going to talk about something today where our topic is regular programming. Like, we're not talking about a once a year event where might have different considerations. We're talking about things that are going to be regular, that are going to come up in your calendar, that are going to be part of like the bread and butter of what you're doing in your shul. And I think with that, considering the diversity is going to be really, really significant. Okay, so let's jump right in. What are the factors that you think about specifically when it comes to creating regular learning and programming opportunities for women? For example, timing, certain themes. What are the factors that are key in your mind when you're talking about your calendar? What's happening every week, every month? And just as a precursor to that, when I first pitched this idea to Robinson Schmidman, we were discussing, is there an expectation that our shuls or our communities are running something every single day? Not necessarily, but, or maybe for your community there is, but just thinking about what does a day, a week, a month, a year look like in our shul is often built up of those smaller building blocks. So that's what we're thinking about. So nobody should panic that now there's an expectation that in LA they are doing something every single day, and in our community we need to do something every single day. So we can all exhale before we begin. And for that, I think we will start with Naomi.
Sure. So it's hard, just like everyone else said, like the wide range of membership is really difficult. Also, our shul, the members don't all go to the same exact school. So there's a lot of schools in the community. We really have to take into account like parent-teacher conferences, back-to-school nights, different communal events. Additionally, there's one of the local kollels does do programming every day. They have Monday to Thursday, something else every day. So we don't want to compete with that. There's no reason to. So we really focus on evenings and Shabbos and what we can accomplish during that time. For example, we scheduled an art event for next week, and I didn't even realize it was my own school's parent-teacher conferences that night. So I'm like, shoots, we got to reschedule that, because not just me that has a conflict, but other members. So it's important to just get a hold of different calendars. I have like every school calendar on my computer, and just make sure you're not overlapping too much.
Okay. Sarah.
So similar to Naomi, I think we need to appreciate and I love programming and I like being a part of it, but women are so busy and so taxed. So coming up with regular programming, like you said, for me to hear a Cole has regular stuff daily is surprising, right? For women to have that ability, no matter what age and stage they are, they do have other things going on, whether it's your physical activity you have to make time for or other things. So we have found that to do things that meet regularly, we want to find meet women where they are to some extent. So women are often in shul anyway on Shabbos. So can we try to find something on Shabbos? Regardless, they're going to be there. Let's do something post-shul immediately for women to have. We've started a women's kiddush, which I'll discuss more later. But again, that's something we consider, how busy women are and how many other things they have going on, which are also very valuable and important. And we want to try to avoid creating a lot of conflicts, which ultimately will create more successful programs, because women will come and show up and be part of it if they're not feeling overly taxed. So beyond looking to other external organizations that have things going on, like you said, parent-teacher conferences, schools, etc., even within our own shul community, if there's a kids event this night, parents are bringing their kids. That means that's something that they're already doing. We should probably not do a women's event the next night. So things like that, just to keep in mind how busy women are in looking at scheduling. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I think that's a really important point, is like, just because they are not necessarily part of the event the next night doesn't mean that it doesn't impact them. Like that
Exactly. I think another factor, and I think that was the question, is timing, right? Time of day, meaning you said that you found that during the day you would get more people for this event, for this, you know, Women's Idea Lab. We've found also that women are often around, believe it or not, more during the day, even women who work between working from home, flexible schedules. That was very surprising. We actually started a brunch and learn program, which got as many people as when we do a night cheer. Nights are hard for people to get out. So that's been another factor that we really keep in mind, is time of day. But okay. Again, we can discuss that more as we go.
Okay, amazing. Rahili, what are the main factors you're thinking about?
So obviously, you know, I totally definitely agree with what Aomi and Sarah have said, but maybe I'll just frame it differently. And I think something that was already mentioned, but just like to take a step back before I get into like the practical things and just like getting a little bit more meta, like the important thing is to think about who your audience is, even with the diversity, right? I think we can still agree, okay, my community is diverse, your community is diverse, but they're still diverse in different ways. And also when you're creating a program, to think about who is my target audience for this program. And even, you know, like you shared about this, you know, Zoom meeting that we have now, and thinking about who the target audience was for this meeting. And I was actually thinking when I was like preparing for this is like, you know, what would I want to hear in this, you know, in this setting, like as a Revitan, and thinking about the, my community, what I do for them. And so I think that that's like an important question to ask, and to ask yourself, like, you know, would I want to go to this? Now, if you're also not the target audience, right? Like I work out of the house 9 to 5. So going to the brunch is not going to be something that would work to me, but that's also okay to say, okay, that's not, like, I'm not the target audience, but then try to get into that headspace. And also, you know, talking to people, which I think we'll get to also later on. You know, so I think that that's important, just like from that, like meta bigger perspective of like thinking about who the target audience is. Like and I'm sure everyone listening also can agree that like something that I find so frustrating is like when speakers or, you know, scholar residences come and like, they're just not speaking like, you know, interesting the audience, or they're only speaking to part of the crowd, and they're not taking who their audience is into consideration of what they're speaking about. So I think it's important to be mindful of that. So like, just, you know, just because we're doing something about, you know, this is like a women's programming, it doesn't mean it has to be about women in Tanakh. Like sometimes women don't want to hear about other women, and they want to explore male figures in Tanakh, or just themes, or not, you know. So I think that that's important, you know, to think about the audience. And just like, I'll, you know, just a specific example that, you know, that I thought about, reflected on in my community, is like, we have like a monthly Rosh Chodesh programming. And in one way, that's like very cliche, but on the other hand, something that we try to do in our community is like, we make it different. We change the format, right? Sometimes it's a video presentation, thanks to the OU Women's Initiative, or sometimes it's a textual learning, or sometimes it's a Kumsit, sometimes it's an Oneg. And it's more like, I approach that as more like, not that it's a Rosh Chodesh in and of itself, the program, but that this is an opportunity to run a program. Like I find like women aren't coming, oh, because it's Rosh Chodesh and this is a special holiday for women. I at least that's my understanding, and again, of my community, but I think it's like, this is an excuse for us to have a program that would interest women. Yes, we have to change it up. We have to think about what the format is going to be, who's going to host it. But I think that also keeps it exciting, that, you know, hopefully we'll keep it going and keep the interest on a regular basis.
Okay. I want to pull from that, and I want to set the stage, I guess, because we've considered the factors, the timing, the demographic, the people we're reaching, how much else is going on in people's lives. So practically, when you are thinking about programming for your community, whether it's learning or other opportunities for women to come together, are you thinking I think, Naomi, you touched on this maybe the most so far, where you said you aim for evenings and weekends, let's say. Yeah. Are you thinking necessarily daily? Are you thinking weekly? Are you thinking monthly? Like, how often are you looking to create those touch points? And something I would just add was that, it, do you feel like that's grassroots, that people have initiated that on their own? Like, we want a weekly shear? Or is that something that you said on your own? Like, I think we should have a monthly gathering. So how are you structuring your programming calendar? Like, how are you approaching that? How are you thinking about that? Sarah, do you want to start us off?
So I would start by saying that we have a programming committee that encompasses all of our school programming in addition to, I mean, not really men's. It does family, kids, and women's really primarily. So we meet quarterly, I would say. So every 2 to 3 months, we have an in-person meeting, and then we have a WhatsApp group that does our follow-up stuff. So even if something wasn't discussed at the quarterly meeting, but there might be a grassroots initiative, we want to see this. We haven't had this in a while. We might have that follow-up happen in our WhatsApp chat and get something going from there. So I think that's an important pointer for communities. Again, I'm sure many of you have that. But having that committee, having those people who are invested, having those people who want to make things happen, be part of it. And then also having a way of communicating to have that follow-up, whether it's WhatsApp or email or in person. But I think that that's very critical. So I would say we do not look for daily. I think, again, that's taxing for many people. I think that trying to have weekly and monthly, we do have a weekly women's halacha shir. We actually this year paused. It's via Zoom. Years ago, it was in person. COVID switched it to Zoom, and it's been on Zoom since. We paused a month or so ago and asked the women who are regular attendees what they wanted. Do they want it to stay halacha? Would they like it to be changed? Would they like it to be in person? And overwhelming, it was they wanted halacha to continue, and they had a few requests for certain specific halachic topics they wanted covered, and they actually all preferred Zoom to continue as well. But I think that speaks to women and their lives, but I also think it speaks to having checking in. Just because you have something going on doesn't mean it should go on forever without pausing and questioning and saying, is this effective? Is this what people want? Even if you think it's effective, maybe people have a desire for it to be different. So that's with regard to weekly. But again, we get a different audience for our weekly halacha shir that we do for our, you know, brunch and learns or our women's kiddushes, which tend to be more young moms who are not able to make it on a weekly nightly call. So I hope that answers that. We do, again, certainly not daily. I think we realize most women are not capable of that in our community. We do try for weekly because I think that consistency, people do appreciate that. And we schedule it usually looking back and, you know, we go, you know, we just met a month ago trying to do 3 months at a time. Hanukkah's coming up. Let's try to get something on the calendar for Hanukkah. You know, we have a women's kumzitz. We also do have stuff that we do every year. That's the more specific programming, but what we've done and what's good, copy paste, people love it. They want to see it again.
Okay. I think that's so important to like the check-in piece, because I think sometimes in like older communities, things get like set in stone and like nobody knows how it became Torah Lemoshe Me-Sinai that you have to meet on Wednesday afternoons. And sometimes we feel glued to those elements when like really there's nothing tethering the people actually participating in that time, date, location, whatever it is. So like that check-in piece is so important. Okay, Rachili, how are you thinking about structuring your calendar?
Yeah, so I'll just really like totally piggybacks to Sarah and Emma, what you reiterated that she said. Now, something that I guess makes, I think, my community a little bit more diverse is that it is a more transient community, I think, than the average community. We definitely have people who have been there for long times, who are, you know, raising their families, who've lived there for decades. And we also have people who are there for 2, 3, 5, 10 years and then move. So that in some ways actually really does force us to think exactly like you said, Emma, of, oh, just because we did it last year. And I think that's very hard to get into that mindset of just, well, it was successful last year, so of course we should do it again. But, you know, me and the other members of our staff, and Sarah, I agree with you, I think you very much need to have like a good, whether it's committee or whether it's volunteers or even like, you know, office staff and administrators in the shul, who are there keeping track of all the programs. And so something that, you know, we very much keep in mind is, I think, what even especially I would say for our yearly programs is we think, was this successful? Like, this is how we ran the Women's Simchas Torah event. This is what happened last year. Yeah, we have a few notes. What do we think? Like, you know, should we try it again? Should we try something different? And this is actually something that I've really taken and learned from my time when I was the OUJLSE educator at Penn with my husband about, you know, over 6 years ago when we left, is that the nature of college campus is that every year you have a 25% turnover, right? Because the seniors graduate, you have a new set of freshmen. So the way that we ran our program as OUJLIC educators was every year things had to be thought of new because you have a 25% new congregants, new student body. And so I very much sort of like internalized that and applied that to our shul programming as well. And like, I think it's important to assess like why a program should be done, not just like, oh, you know, because we do it, because it's important to have a weekly shiur. Well, why? Is there really a need? Is there an interest for it? So that's just, you know, some you know, what you were shared before, like made me think about.
Okay. And do you aim primarily for weekly, monthly?
So daily? Okay. So generally we look at it in a year calendar. Obviously, you know, things are set obviously around the Yomim Tovim and time of year. With that being said, because obviously you can't necessarily plan what's going to happen in 10 months from now, but we do generally look at it as a, in a monthly, you know, looking 1 month or 2 months ahead and what's going to be our monthly program this year. Oh, Rosh Chodesh is, you know, this day, what is it going to look like? What should we do this year? Yeah. So I would say generally we look at it monthly. We're recently just starting like a women's shiur. And now we're looking at doing more like weekly, every other week. And I guess something that's, I don't know if it's related to specifically this question, but I'll just share it because I think it's, you know, I think it's an interesting point to think about is I'm always a fan of like doing things in series. Because I think like having like a weekly shiur, even a monthly, you know, learning, I think people are like very like, fear of commitment. So if I see like, oh, it's a three-part series, people are like, okay, I could do the next 3 weeks, right? Or the next 3 months or whatever it is. And also as someone who's behind the scenes doing the programming, it's also much easier to restart programs and as opposed to it, like just naturally fizzling out, which is complicated, I think, for many reasons. In this case, it's a three-part, it's a five-part series. And then it's over. So even if it fizzled out, right, and you know the numbers dwindled over the weeks, but then it's so much easier to reinvigorate. Okay, we're done with that, and you know, people don't have to know that it wasn't quote unquote successful, which I'm sure we're going to address what even that means. But it's so much easier to okay, now we have something new, and also if then that series is successful, and it's over, but then we have some energy to continue it. Whether it's okay, now we're announcing a part two. Or we're going to do something different, but in a similar format, or figure out why that was successful and apply those factors to creating something else.
Right. So important, like to give yourself that initial boundary as like a test case. Like if it takes off, it's easy to continue it. And if it doesn't, it was supposed to end either way. I think that's really insightful. Naomi, how are you thinking about the structure of the calendar? Weekly, monthly, daily?
So really similar to, I think, what everybody else is doing. We look at it, you know, I kind of print out the calendar and look a year in advance, like the beginning of the year, like, okay, what ideas do we have for different months and different times of the year? And then when it comes down to it, we look at it and see, okay, practically how busy are our social lives right now? Do we really need something now? Should we skip it? Should we wait? And then also because we live in LA, first of all, we have a few members of our community that have very illustrious parents that come to visit. So we always tell them, you know, if your parent is coming, tell us, we want to squeeze them in. And a lot of times people, you know, LA is on the circuit of different people speaking tours, so to speak. A few weeks ago, a Rev from New York reached out and said, hey, I'm going to be in LA. I'm available to give a marriage class, you know, so we have him scheduled in for later this week. And we tend to just, so we kind of make room, we move things around as need be. And then like what everyone else was saying is, you know, we used to have this Chumash shiur back in the day, like a textual in-depth shiur on Monday nights at 8:30, when our core audience, our core membership really had no kids at home, maybe one kid, and it was just easier to get out at night. Then over COVID, we switched it to Zoom, which was great. And then we tried to bring it back in person recently, and we had only 5 people show up. So we just saw like, hey, we love this shiur. I love this shiur. Rebbetzin loved this shiur. But like, it just, no one, you know, it just didn't appeal as much anymore. So it's important that also, like, even if you have your regularly scheduled events and programs, not to just keep it because it's regularly scheduled, but to really take a look and see, like, does it make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Just a pitch, that is something that we do offer from the OU, is we try to help people also to use our programs in a way that works in a communal space. So something that people have been getting very creative with, and we will talk more about this, hopefully in this space as we get closer to the beginning of the next round of Nachyomi, but sort of that idea, Naomi, like you're saying, like sometimes like a regular share was so popular, but now people are just not used to that since COVID. But the OU has so many of these audio series like Nachyomi, like Torah Imecha Parsha, Torah Imecha Halacha is a written, like a, you get like a 2-sentence blurb each day. Like there are these series that come out, or are counting towards Sinai series on different topics that can be used in a shul space to provide sort of daily individual learning that builds up to weekly communal learning to sort of meet these different people. Like people might be looking for the social experience of coming out to a share, but they're not coming out every day for sure. And even every week might be a challenge. But if you all listen to a certain topic of audio and people listen to it at their own pace and then come together for communal discussion, conversation, something that really plugs into that social piece, that can be an interesting combination. So we'll talk more about that as we go on, I'm sure. But we're always glad to talk about that individually. But sort of that balance of, like, right, people want to do it. It's not that they don't like it. It's not like they don't like the learning, but sometimes the time, the commitment, the just getting yourself out is a challenge, I think, that we all face. Okay, now to the meat and bones. What are 1 to 2 successful regular programs that you have run for women, and what made them successful? Like, what was your measure of success? Naomi, how about you start us off? I know you just finished, but we'll get you, sure, get you on the momentum of that.
Sure. Okay, so I think, Sarah, you mentioned that you probably have this as well, but we have a really great monthly Shabbos Avarchim share after davening. So it's great because women are either in shul because they were davening or because they were there with their kids in groups. Generally, we don't schedule any men's shiurim for the same time, so the men are hopefully available to take care of any children. And we really set it up with its own kiddush, separate from the main minyan. We have iced coffee, iced tea, fruit and pastries. And we get different women from the community, or men rather, to come and speak about Parsha or any Yom Tovim that are coming up. We actually had last week Chana Meira Katz. So I saw she was already doing your Bereishis series, so I figured let's tap into her. Yeah, she's always phenomenal. She actually gets such a great turnout because she's a phenomenal speaker. And what's also so nice about this is we're having this Shabbos, actually, our third bas mitzvah girl who wanted to, instead of having a regular kiddush, is doing a bas mitzvah kiddush and shir in this space. So it's such a nice way to celebrate and something different and meaningful. And then, Emma, I was actually going to touch on this. We did the OU's Counting Towards Sinai program last year, and it was so great for those unfamiliar. You know, the OU Women's Initiative sent out these 5-minute audio clips with really easy takeaways on different midos between Pesach and Shavuos. And then we had a weekly Shabbos afternoon get together at like 5 o'clock, so before Mincha time. And we had about between 15 to 25 women come every Shabbos to just recap. And what was great is we really tapped into the older audience, which was really nice. Like, instead of having our usual 20 to 30 year olds, we had people 50 plus who came and learned, and we would just discuss it for 30, 45 minutes max. And it was just a nice way to target a different group.
Yeah, I would say the Counting Towards Sinai group, I'm also the Rabbitson of a shul in my other hat. And it was interesting because we used to have a Shabbos Mevarchim shir that I would slave away to prepare, a full shir, so sheets, like, that's my style. And we would get good attendance. People come, thank God. But, like, it was a lot of work for me. So I would, like, push it off. Maybe it can be in 2 weeks after Shabbos Mevarchim. Like, I was not so consistent about it. And then we did the Counting Towards Sinai program. So many women participated. It was very conversational. Even if they didn't listen during the week, they loved coming together to have that framework of conversation around Midos. And it made it so much easier for me. Like, I could use the guide for the facilitator that was sent out each week. I was able to do that. And it made it, it was every week. I was like, I never could have done this. I would have never given a sheer every week of Sphera, but this made it right. So much more feasible. So.
Yeah, it was really also, we got people who didn't necessarily listen during the week, but it's very easy. I mean, it was very easy ideas to just talk about and discuss. And we loved it. And also with our Shabbos of Arkham series, we don't have, like, our Rebbetzin doesn't give it every week. She probably does it once a year, like every month rather. She does it once a year, but we tap into different people available to us.
Right. Okay, amazing. Sarah, do you want to continue?
Yeah, sure. So again, you already did the women's Kiddush. That is a newer thing for us. Wildly popular. Women love it. We also have had women within the community, whether it's or guest speakers to be there for the, you know, visiting their family, like you mentioned as well. Or honestly, my husband's the rabbi. We'll have him do it on occasion as well, because we've also found sometimes women are not in shul for the drasha. So how often are they hearing the Rav speak? So that's a really positive time for them to hear from the Rav, which is huge, because that's an important kesher to be creating and having that space for it. So that's just something to keep in mind also. Like, you don't need a guest speaker. You can have your rabbi, because how often are women hearing the rabbi speak? They're not always in shul. Okay, side point, but an important takeaway. We do brunch and learns. I mentioned that. They're not, I would say, you know, it goes in waves how consistent we have them, but I think it's important from a programming perspective. We started it, my daughter's seven, one of my daughters, and I think I started it when I was on maternity leave with her. It was the winter, I was cold, I was home, and I needed connection. And I said, we're going to bring in a speaker, and women bring food. It's a potluck, our shul in general. Like, you can't bring in food into the shul, but if it's in someone's home, you know, then it's like, well, right, who brings it? But that's generally been, from a kasher's perspective, what we've done, and it, you know, works. So it's a potluck, women come. It was staggering to see the number of women who came. And it really was a huge realization. There are women home during the day, whether on maternity leave, working from home, flexible scheduling, retired, not working. And we just got more women than we will get for an evening shiur. And people love the connection, love the camaraderie midweek and the Torah content. And I think it's important also to add, we are not often paying for the speaker. Sometimes a little bit. So we don't charge for this. It's we may do a $10 suggested donation if the speaker is charging us, but I try to pull from local speakers, local teachers who are really happy. Again, they're often around easier midday than in the evening themselves. So they don't mind to come. It's not like they're schlepping far usually. They're happy to have an audience that's receptive. So that's been tremendous. And my last point, I hope I'm not going too long, but I think this is another good one. This is not a shul one, but it's a community one, and it's been going on in our community at least 10 years. We have a women's summer learning series. I know you all touched upon the Counting Towards Sinai. This is community-wide. It's not shul-specific, and it's lay-led. So lay people will volunteer to speak. There is a theme for the summer, whether it's a mitzvah that you love, midos, different topics every year. And people volunteer, and it's hosted in people's homes. So people volunteer to host, volunteer to speak, and it gets put out to the entire community. And that gets 50 women easy. And we are not a big community. People really love it. My own personal sidebar, I'm not sure I should say this on a recorded meeting, but I'll say it, is it could be a little risky because people are volunteering to speak. But when you're having someone speak, you want to make sure they're capable of speaking. And that could be a little bit risky. I'm just putting it out there. I think overall, the sentiment is so positive, and it's so beautiful to give people opportunities and really, you know, to shine and share when they're not usually going to be asked to speak because they're not really a speaker, but they usually have what to share. So that's just been, again, it's a community women's program that is run every summer, usually the, like, you know, part of June, July, August, at least 8 to 10 weeks that people sign up for. Hopefully those are some helpful, good nuggets.
100%. Wow. Okay. That's, I love the idea of the lay leaders being the ones to do the full communal event, because especially when the summer, like, take something off your plate. But I feel like when the shuls have to make it very like, okay, now we're going to do something together. Sometimes it's a little more stiff, but I feel like if the lay leaders just say like, we're doing this as a community, I feel like there's something so nice about that. Okay, Rachili, what are some successful programs?
Sure. So one thing that I already mentioned is our Women's Monthly Rosh Chodesh program. And like I said before, like it doesn't look the same thing every single month. Some months it's like a formal textual learning, full blown out shiur. Sometimes it's more like a little bit of text and just leads to discussion and conversation and connection. Sometimes it's watching, one of the videos. I'm a big fan of like Don't Reinvent the Wheel. The OU's Women's Initiative produces like wonderful programs, on Purim or, whatever it is. So, sometimes we do something like that. I guess part of the way we think about what to do that month is also like when it falls out. So like we actually took a risk and we like Rosh Chodesh was on Friday or Shabbos. So we said, let's just host an Oneg. And we're like, who's going to come out, at 8 o'clock on a Friday night? And women came. We actually find when it's like a weekend Rosh Chodesh, we'll do like an Oneg or we'll do a Malava Malka or a Kumzit. That's something that's been helpful. And in terms of like the way that I know you like asked the question of like how you measure success specifically for that program, something that I see or feel that it's successful is that like we have women volunteering to host it, right? There are some times that we'll do it in the shul, but I think sometimes changing it up and bringing it into people's home also is something more welcoming. So the fact that people are like, oh, I'd love to host next time, or like that's like that I think is a really good sign. The second thing that I want to bring up, and I know this is like on women's programming, and I think we're all focused on like women, but I want to talk about like younger girls and programming that we can do for them. And something that I'm very proud of that our shul recently, this is like a relatively new program that we did, is that we have like a girls learning Motzei Shabbos that I run. And for me, what that looked like, and I think this is how we can, just advice and suggestion how to get programs started in everyone's communities is like, see what's missing. And what I found in my community is that a different shul opened up their Avo Subanim, like a father-son learning program. And I have my own girls. My husband would take my son. And, so I felt like a personal lack. And yes, I learned with her, but that felt like a little bit different. And also like this type of program, it it's changed over time. Like, I don't know, 5 years ago, whenever 6 years ago, when we tried to, we're like, oh, let's do a family learning. Cause that other shul wasn't going to open it up to girls and mothers and women. So we said, let's do a family learning first, if people would come with their families, whatever, semi-successful COVID then just killed it naturally. And then what happened was, 2 years ago, Motzei Shabbos, while like my husband and son were out, my daughter and her friends were just like playing and schmoozing and chatting. And then last year I was like, girls, you're too big. Like we can learn together. I'm a teacher. And it started like very small, but then like their friends, like they had other friends who were over on Shabbos afternoon. And then they kept staying till after Shabbos. So, oh, you can come learn with us. We're learning, this seafair. And then word got around and people heard about it. So by the end of last year, I had like a whole group of girls. Okay, I'm taking frozen pizza out from my freezer. And this year we've like had a formal program. We have it like a family sponsored it, in memory of a family member. We get fresh pizza, which, makes the girls feel like, it is an official program similar to the Avo Subanim in it, that is run. And, our first week we had, for my community, we had 25 girls. That was like huge. And also, it wasn't something that I was also proud of, is that it wasn't, like shul specific, and it was actually families from different shuls, but it represented like the larger community. So that's something that has been very successful and that we've been very excited about.
I think, Rachli, that you're touching on in that last point, first of all, it sounds like a beautiful program, but you're also, sorry about this sunburst that has now moved to my face. You're touching on something, which is sometimes there are certain demographics that are super jam-packed, and sometimes we all want to like program it. And Sarah, like you mentioned in the beginning, like the young moms who are running, and like Naomi, you said, like if you have PTA, everybody has PTA. Like certain demographics are so programmed for, but like And I don't know if I would necessarily want to come. I mean, maybe I would, because then it would get me out of my house. But like on a Motzei Shabbos, I'm tired. But like the teenage girls, like they want to do something on Motzei Shabbos. Like the girls, they, so tapping into the demographic, or like Naomi said, like tapping into the older group that is more open to coming out to something weekly, where you might get like a different demographic if a specific program is regular and works at a time for them. I feel like that's so important to keep in mind. Like there's just a need waiting there. Like they're ready to do something. You just filled it with Torah. So that's really, really beautiful. Just for the sake of time, I am going to condense two of our last questions. What are any potential challenges? And I feel like we touched on that already. So if you feel like you've used that, what are potential challenges and one or two practical tips for implementing these programs? It can be anything from make sure you have a sponsor from the outset so it doesn't dwindle halfway through, to anything of the like. So one or two tips on practical implementation and any potential challenges to be aware of. Sarah, do you want to start us off?
Yeah. My quick tip or trick, I'll start with that, for making sure that they're successful: have other people be on board. It should not only be on one person. The promoting, the posting, the encouraging should be with other people. And I think challenges, like we said, how over-programmed women can be, considering that it is other programs take their attention also, like we said, right? The kids program might also require them to be leaving the house. So just to keep that in mind. And I think an important thing that's not, you know, wasn't mentioned is that men's learning is also very important. So there's a lot of men's learning opportunities going on that we have to be mindful to not be conflicting. And that can be a challenge, right? If there's a nightly shiur for men, do we put something up against that? How do we structure that? So that's something I think that can pose. We think about that a lot, and the best way to go about it, we don't want to sacrifice women who are committed to supporting their husband's Torah learning and then say, hi, but there's a shiur for you at the same time. So how do we, you know, navigate that is up to every community, but I think it's something that can be a challenge. It's not one that's not workable around, but something to be aware of.
Definitely. Naomi, a tip or trick or challenge?
Okay. So one, also the same tip as trick, is like really delegating. There was like an event a few years ago, we had like sushi and succulents. It was so much fun, but I did all of it. And I was completely depleted and exhausted by the end of it and didn't want to like talk to anybody for a week. Yeah. So versus times when like I really delegated properly, I just walked away feeling so much better. Also, I really find that spending an hour and texting people about an event really makes a difference. There's been times when like I would ask somebody like, hey, why didn't you come? And she's like, well, I didn't think it was for my age or for me. I'm like, why not? Like it was just a social event. Anyone can come. So like, I really think taking the time, it does take time, but really sending individual texts like, hey, Sarah, we're having this event tomorrow night. Hope you can make it. Let me know if you have any questions. Like copy, paste, edit a little bit and just spend the time and do it. Also knowing sometimes, I think we mentioned in the beginning, like sometimes we create programs that we want to go to, but sometimes your audience doesn't want to go to it. Like we had an event before Pesach last year with a local psychologist about navigating anxiety before Pesach, which we figured like, wow, that's so useful. We all have anxiety before Pesach, whether you're traveling or staying home, like it's an anxious time. And we had like 7 people come, including the Rebbetzin, including my cohorts. And we had this whole fancy like grace table and mini candles to give out and a whole big thing. And people just are busy before Pesach and don't want to, like they just weren't available to come out. So I think it's also important that to tap in and realize like, okay, things that you would be interested in, well, maybe not you're the only person, but it's not what your core audience is really looking for.
Okay. That's so important. I think sometimes it's funny because the busiest times of year sometimes brew the most ideas. So like there's so much you can do before Pesach, and also there's so much to do before Pesach. So
yeah, it just didn't work. I mean, he was great. He gave the talk anyways and he was phenomenal, but yeah, just didn't work.
Right. Okay. And Rachili, to end us off with any tips or tricks.
So I feel like ending is like, yes, what Sarah said and yes, what Naomi said. Those points are like all what I thought of and prepared to speak about. Like, yes, you need good you know, shul staff, like I'm very lucky, like our executive director and administrators, like she'll text me and she's like, Rosh Chodesh on Wednesday is Wednesday this week. What do you want to do? So that's really great. Like Naomi said, also, I find like reaching out to people individually worth the time, not just like the mass emails, the mass texts, the mass, you know, shul listserv, which that's important also. Challenges with that, like Sarah and Naomi said about delegating and getting other people involved, that is so important. And it's so true. And also with that comes the frustration that sometimes they just don't get back to you. Or you ask for feedback and you're like, oh, we're trying this new program. Let me know what you think. Let me know how it's going. And like, it's just radio silence, right? Or you don't really get that or any feedback that you actually can use. Again, not necessarily a solution. I don't have a solution. I just find that that's a challenge when I make a program to have that in mind. So I do think like for programs, there's going to be this like element and this leap of faith about how it's going to be and successful. And the last thing that I'll share, which Naomi actually connects to your the example that you gave about that pre-Pesach program, is I think like an important, in terms of maybe another tip or trick to have in your toolbox, is like to have a certain perspective about what successful means. And sometimes, maybe always in this type of work, it's not going to be like quantitative, crunch the numbers. And sometimes I often really have the perspective that like, if women come, even if it's just seven, wow, on a Tuesday night, seven women took the time to nurture their neshama learning Torah, took the time to nurture their emotional, mental health. And for them, that was huge, because what else would they have done, right? They would have just been at home, not learning Torah, not taking care of themselves. So sometimes it's not just about the numbers, and that it's important. Like sometimes the fact that it's happening is important more than just who is actually or how many people are actually there. Now, yes, you can be over-programmed and have so many flyers and things happening daily and no one actually shows up to any of these things. That's, you know, bad for so many reasons. It's a bad, you know, waste of resources, but success isn't always in big numbers. Something like a mushal, like I like to think about, is like, you know, having landing pads, and we sort of, I guess, coming full circle about how we opened up, about having diverse populations. Not every program is going to be for everyone, and that's okay, right? And sometimes therefore this program had just a handful of women, but you want to have different landing pads for different type of people, right? Not all programs are going to be for everyone, but yes, there is a program for everyone. So creating a women's program is creating a landing pad for a group of people, right? And success is not just looking at that specific program, but at this larger perspective of like this community, this building, this shul that we've created for different individuals.
Okay, yes, 100%. I think that that's so amazing, that especially when we're talking about these regular programs, which sometimes aren't like the biggest, most exciting that the shul runs, like the dinner or a huge like fundraiser event, sometimes these can be so much more impactful for people when it's something with consistency, when it's something that hits all of the right times that they're looking for. I think 100% right. And such an important point to end off on, that sometimes those make the deepest impact. The brunch and learn, like you said, Sarah, might bring in a lot of people, but maybe a razzle dazzle huge event would bring in more. But the people who have chosen and made the decision to come out in the middle of the day, and they make that a priority to learn something, to nurture their social, emotional needs, that's making a huge impact on them in a way that a big event might not. Okay, I want to, at this point, we only have a few minutes left, I want to open up our chat for any questions. If anyone has any questions, also, we're a small enough group, you're welcome to unmute.
That's great.
I have a question. I my name is Trudy Farber. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we've done quite a few things, but what has not been so successful is the concept of a series. And I wondered if you had any more pointers on best time of year, best topics, whatever for series. But I did want to say that we did do one thing that I thought I might share that I had pushed for years because I used to work full time. I'm now retired. Is that we got somebody special to teach Chovos Halavavos, and she's doing it Monday nights and Tuesday mornings. So she's only doing one prep, but it appeals to two different time frames. And she has a core group at each set. The other thing that we do that nobody mentioned is then to connect with the Rav is we have once a month or every other month, we have a Q&A with the Rav that you can send in Shilas by email or text, or you can ask in person. And that gets a lot of people. And we don't have a lot of people, but we can see 40 women on a cold night for a Q&A.
In person or on Zoom?
In person.
Wow.
Wow, that's huge.
That's huge. You have an amazing Rebbetzin.
So it's everything. She needs our tefillas, but it's her daughter-in-law that gives Chovos Halavavos. But the Q&A can be everything from kashrus to hashkafa to, and he always throws in some story about something somewhere to illustrate a point. So it's just a suggestion. But back to my series question, if you could address that.
I'm happy to answer. We've done like contemporary halacha series that was popular with like hot button issues. People liked that. But we did last year a chinuch series. Based on the Rav Matisyahu Salomon's book, and it tapered off. Meaning, I'm sort of with you. I don't always find that series are amazing. I think there's a lot of buy-in initially, and then it tapers off. So I think it's sort of hit or miss in terms of, but I think what Racheli said, and maybe she could speak to this more, is true. Like, you sort of know it's a finite number that I'm committing to, but even with that finite number, I sometimes find that people trickle at the end. So was it so good that we did it as a series? I will say another trick to a series is sometimes doing a themed topic. So maybe it's Chinuch or Shalom Bayis, and having different speakers. So three different speakers on one topic can sometimes be a compelling way to get people in the door.
Thank you.
I thought of one thing that has been very, very successful for us recently, and I think it's worth sharing. We have started doing panels. Women love it. They love it. We switched our Shavuos programming. Instead of having a shir on a Shavuos, we did panels the last 2 years. Happy to share my flyers if anybody wants, always. People loved it. They loved hearing from different voices about the same topic. So we did a chinuch panel in Malav Malka with local educators 2 years ago. Also, it was fabulous. Personally, I benefited tremendously. So that's another thing to keep in mind. You have to get more speakers, but they don't have to prepare as much and they have the questions in advance. So pros and cons.
I also think with a series to not fight the circumstances. Like I know I lived in Chicago and programmed in Chicago prior to coming to New Jersey. And to start a series in February when it's freezing outside, and I know Milwaukee has a similar climate, is just it's fighting an uphill battle, I feel like. Whereas if you decide to start a series, let's say with a specific speaker, community educator in the summertime, and people like them, they may then be inclined to do, if you do a summer, fall, winter, and spring, by the time they get to the winter one, they're more motivated because they already did the summer series, the fall series. By the time it comes to winter, they like the educator, they're connected to the group. There's something a little more buy-in rather than we finally have time after the Yom Tovim, which I think often happens. We have time after the Yom Tovim, so we start programs in the winter, which then you're fighting for the first one, and then it's harder to build on that.
Now, the one thing that I'll just share about this idea of the series is that you don't necessarily have to say it's a three-part series. Like, sometimes I've done that, and then sometimes it's just like, oh, series, right? And then, like, all of a sudden, I mean, I don't know if it's like all of a sudden, but sometimes it's like, oh, we're done. You know, we finished the parak, we finished the part, whatever it is. And then, like, we saw it was, like, naturally fizzling out. I think that just, like, the advantage of using or experimenting with the series is that, like, if you see it's not landing well, right, it's not being received well, it's not successful in however you define your terms, so then it's much easier to switch to find something else. It's not like, oh, wait, where did this program go? Oh, that's bad. That means no one came from it. No, it's just, right? Like, it's so much easier to, you know, to come up with something new. Like the sometimes like the perception of the programming that's happening in the show, we have to be mindful of that. So that's what I find, like, sometimes the, you know, the interest in the, you know, that's like advantage of having series. Something else just to think about is sometimes like the series, it can be helpful to do things where like the topic is really broad. Like Sarah, you said like, oh, contemporary halacha, right? So every few weeks or even every week, like it totally changes topics. It's just under this like broader theme. So this makes me think of, you know, something we do in our show, not limited to women, but our Shalosh Shudas program, which we've revamped. And if we had more time, I would go into a little bit of the whole history of it. But in short, it used to not be successful. It was like a really awful event. I don't know, like, you know, the way that Shalosh Shudas was it, what it looked like in our shul. And what we have now is really great. And the idea of it, like our theme, I guess, for lack of better words, is that we call it like scholars and scholarship. And every week there's another person in history. Now my husband happens to be like a history person. And he'll talk about like the history of, you know, the Rambam, or sometimes it's a little bit a more enigmatic person. And he'll try to take something that they write about on the Parsha. But it's also lended itself that, you know, someone will say like, oh, can you speak about Nahum Ali? But someone actually last week just said like, can you talk about Sarah Schneer? So it's not necessarily always related to the weekly parsha, but it keeps changing. But people know like, oh, what to expect. And then obviously we sometimes break from it, and there's a different, you know, speaker or something. But our regular weekly program is, oh, you know, there's going to be a topic on it. And we've related to another point that was previously mentioned about getting other people to speak, is that we've had other people in our community speak about, you know, some different figures and scholars in Jewish history. And in some ways, like the advantage of getting people involved in that, like it's an easy Wikipedia to like find out who Rashi was, right? And you want to share like a really meaningful Rashi that you are aware of on this week's Parsha. You know, like Sarah said, when you have other people speaking, you're taking a risk of like, is there any damage control you're going to have to do? So, you know, obviously you have to know your community and your people and the topic. But we found that to be successful also.
Thank you very much.
Can I just, I'm sorry. I don't want to jump in if somebody else has commented.
No, I think you're good, Rav.
Yeah, I'm good. Okay. So we just had a remarkably successful program. The speaker herself comes with, she's herself a very impressive woman, but I think that the slot that we chose was very valuable. And I think that it's a good winter opportunity, the Friday night Oneg for women, because the men are home and can babysit and the women can come out. They had walking groups. And so to do something consistently in that slot can be very effective. But I also think what made it effective, the first time I've used this feature on WhatsApp in this space, was to create a broadcast. And the amount of women who showed, because I personally contacted them and, you know, said, I look forward to seeing you. I really wasn't trying to be manipulative. I really would be happy to email every single and, you know, WhatsApp everybody individually. But this was a very effective way of reaching 200 plus women instantly. And it showed. We had to bring in our lawn chairs because we ran out of chairs. So I think the combination of broadcasts plus a good slot, I don't think we were toying with Malava Malka. People are distracted. They have things to do. They have kids to take care of. We were toying with Shalosh Shudas, who's watching the kids. The husbands have to go to Mincha. It's a very short Shabbos. So that the winter, we've never done it before, and we're doing it again this coming week. Again, super happens to be a very, also a brand name, you know, marquee name speaker, but I think the slot itself is something to capitalize on. And finally, you know, I loved what each one of you said, and I am inspired and I took notes. I think the point about success is can also be recognized in the awareness that programming is going on in your shul, even if I'm not attending. And we certainly speak about that here at the Women's Initiative. It's okay. You can't, I mean, there are women who are superstar Tardi Mecha, you know, super women, and they're doing Tardi Mecha Parsha and Haftorah and Nachyomi and Machshava now. But that's not the expectation. But the fact that these exist and that you can take advantage and you know that they're available and you're proud that my shul or my organization has this array of programming is great, even if the women don't show. So obviously we want them to show, but the fact that they don't show and they are aware that it's going on in itself is a win. So I think that's important.
100%. Okay, I just want to close because we have some very, very busy presenters here. So thank you everyone for being here today. Thank you to our presenters. Thank you to everyone who asked questions and contributed. And I know I learned a ton. And thank you for being part of this space. We are excited to have you back at future Programming Idea Lab programs. Keep an eye on your email, your WhatsApp, and we look forward to continuing this community conversation together. Have a great day, everyone.